you're a football fan of a certain vintage, you'll remember Keith Houchin's magnificent diving header and Gary Mabbott's disastrous own goal as Coventry City beat Tottenham at Wembley to win the FA Cup back in 1987. Fast forward to 2024 and the Sky Blues are chasing another FA Cup dream with an erratic Manchester United blocking their route to the final. It's Red Devils' side that could reach a third domestic final in the space of two seasons. I'm Kevin Hatchard and this is Football Only Better. Sky Sports' Lewis Jones in the starting side today. Lewis, this is a curiosity with United, isn't it? For all of their clear structural issues under Erik ten Hag, and we've talked about them so often on the show this season, in cup competitions, they've actually done really well under him.
They have, yeah. No, this seems to be his sort of forte, doesn't it, coming through these cup competitions. But giant killings or upsets just don't really happen at this stage of the FA Cup anymore. So it should be quite simple for Coventry to make the final, you'd argue.
Lucky United trying to upset them, yeah.
only kidding, Man United fans. You're crap, but you're not that crap at the moment. So they are favourites to win here in 90 minutes at 1.5 on the Betfair Exchange, and Coventry at 6.6. Should be a really good game, this, actually. I'm really looking forward to watching this. And as I've just mentioned, you don't really get massive upsets at this stage of the competition, the FA Cup, these days, unfortunately. So I think just Wembley plays a part in the semi-finals. Or it seems just that, not sure I really like going to watch football there anymore, actually. I'm very privileged to go and watch some really good games and cover some great games at Wembley. But I do think it's just a very nice atmosphere to play in. It's a big pitch, first-class facilities, and the better teams rarely have an off day at playing such a venue at Wembley. It does affect the excitement of a game, I think. It's just a big, big pitch. There's something about Wembley that just affects a game, I think. I've always got that in my mind when trying to form a sort of opinion on a game that gets played there. And yeah, stop the press here. I'm actually on board with United's win price here. 1.5 on the Betfair Exchange. Not said that much this season. In the last 29 games involving Man City, Man United, Arsenal, Liverpool or Chelsea in the FA Cup fifth round quarterfinals or semi-finals, they've won 26 of 29 in 90 minutes, which is a really, really strong, healthy record for the favourites at this stage of the competition. And the sort of three outlier results there were games where Leicester beat Chelsea, I think, twice. One of them was in the final. So Leicester was sort of a top five club then. And the other result was when Brighton took Man United to penalties last season. So, and Brighton that were playing some of the best football in the Premier League at that point. So again, not really huge upsets, were they? Whether if they were not upsets, I think Brighton might have gone, I think Man United just about went off favourites against Brighton. But yeah, no, so you rarely see them at this stage of the competition. And I do think that sort of 1.5 for Man United is actually borderline backable. But obviously we do need to get creative and turn their odds of 2-5 on the sportsbook into something a bit more backable on the bet builder. So it's time to sound the Manchester United corner against Claxon again, Kev.
Yes.
For the 6,000th time.
Wonderful.
Beautiful. It's the extra quality in the United ranks that is likely to win the game for United, but not their style of play or the process, because it just continues to baffle me watching them. And are they trying to play a low block and also be a pressing team? It's very just weird to watch them, and I just don't.
Bournemouth
get
game.
It.
What the hell? What the hell was all that about?
Again, shots just rained down on the United goal. Casemiro got exposed again, and Jamie Redknapp had compared him to, I think it was like watching someone playing Soccer Aid, wasn't it?
Yes.
So I think that was nice for my Casemiro angle that we were speaking about a few weeks ago. So I do think, yeah, he's a massive weakness in this team still. And I just think that Wembley pitch is, he's going to get tired very quickly on that Wembley pitch, I thought, even against the Championship outfit. So I just feel like United are going to allow Coventry to venture forward at their own goal at will at regular intervals. But like many teams that play Man United, it's not actually the goals against column that gets affected. It's the shots and the corner count. They stay in games, and it's just a case of the opposition racking up shots and corners, but United managing to stay in the game. So these corners conceded numbers, they just remain out of control, really. Shipping 119 in their last 12 Premier League games. So that's, again, the most of any Premier League team in that period. That's an average of 9.9 per game. And whatever the line has been set at by the bookmakers for the opposition corner line, which is normally around the even money mark, so whether it be 5.5, 6.5, 7.5, somewhere wrong around that, those lines. It's always been surpassed in, so 11 of the last 12 times it's been surpassed by the opposition team. So again, this isn't really a variable or a bet that the traders have really caught up with yet, I don't think. So Brentford, I mean, we just go back to some of these numbers that Man United corner against numbers. Brentford won 14, which would have been, about 100-1. Man City won 15. I think Boisey was on the first half corner count there for Man City at maybe triple figures. Boisey, is that right?
Yeah, that was 100-1, but they don't seem to price that one up anymore. So we have to go full 90 minutes instead. But yeah, that was 10 or more in the first half. That's what I do, you know. I've got a new nickname now. The market move. No. Actually, shut up, boys.
So it's very rare to find 100-1 winners that are achievable in football betting. So these are sort of lines that have been snapped up over the past sort of few months by probably some shrewd people out there. So in order to get that sort of Manchester United win price to somewhere backable for me in 90 minutes, I am going to add the total match corner count to go over 8.5. So this is both teams' corner count. I think that's just a safer way of playing it if you're looking to go in on a shorter price. So that means we can cheer on both corners at both ends. And that gets us to 10 to 11 on the sportsbook. So Manchester United to win in 90 minutes and over 8.5 corners. But I'd also just advise punters to have a good look at the Coventry corner lines when they're available and see if you can have some fun with the bet builders, maybe combine the Coventry shots again. I mean, it was first of all like a broken record saying it, but while the prices are still there and readily available, I would still
keep
going. So yeah, I do think Manchester United will win the game, but I definitely think the corner lines are something to add into the mix.
Big bad market breaker Boisey is on the scene. Alex Boys from betting.betfair.com is with us once again. Coventry stunned Wolves in the quarters. I must admit, I didn't see that coming. I thought Wolves were looking good, really, but amazing comeback from them. Can they raise their game again? And as Lewis has kind of outlined there, in some ways they won't have to because United are easy to play against, even though they might be the rightful favourites.
Yeah, you could almost say, couldn't you, that like the Wolves tie was potentially harder to come through than because Manchester United will give them the opportunities, and it's just whether they take them or not. I think Lewis is right; the quality may potentially tell in the end, but Coventry will get their sort of moment in the sun, and if they can either score first or take advantage of the sort of number of chances they're likely to be given, this could make it a really, really entertaining tie for sure. And I'm not going to go too deep on the Man United shots conceded because Lewis has touched on it and we've touched on it week after week.
I feel like it's half the show every week. United just give away so many shots and corners.
It's
and
just hard
terrible.
To look elsewhere from like a betting point of view because, like Lewis said, the prices are almost holding up. And with them playing a championship team as well, again, just because of the short price Man United, this could be a real chance to get some really nice lines coming up on Coventry shots and cons, as Lewis said. But I mean, there was actually a line going around the other day that at this stage of the Premier League season, that 2008 Derby team, who were the worst side ever in the campaign, they'd face fewer shots at this stage than the current Manchester United team. And whilst I couldn't actually verify that, I did have my friends at Opta confirm to me that Derby faced 629 in total that season, which means Man United would need to face 57 more in their six remaining top flight games to.
I'll do that in one game. Don't worry about that.
It's less than 10 a game, and most teams are hitting 15, 20 with ease, I guarantee, so that they could surpass that sort of side for shots faced, which is remarkable. It really, really is. So, I think, this is Coventry, slightly lesser opposition, lower division, but even against Newport in the, was it the previous round or the round before? Man United, they won at Newport, didn't they? They're a bottom half League Two team and they faced 17 shots that day in Manchester United, seven of which hit the target. They did throw away that two goal lead as well before getting over the line. So Coventry getting their shooting opportunities doesn't worry me. So then we look at their players. It turns out Coventry boast one of the highest scorers in England in 2024 in Ellis Sims. He netted twice at Wolves. They've got the American Hadji Wright, who's having a really, really good season for Coventry. He's got 15 league goals to his name in the championship. which and I think Sims is on 13, but all of Sims pretty much have come this year. He's in red hot form. Only four players have scored more championship goals than Hadji Wright. He's 15 this season, and he's got the second highest XG per 90 in the division as well. And Hadji Wright averages just over three shots a game, and Ellis Sims just under. So they're both very shot heavy as well, which is where this gets pretty exciting. You know, against Wolves in the last round, Sims had four shots, Wright had seven, and between them
seven.
They've got seven. Yes, and between them they've scored 24 goals this calendar year. So we've got shot happy men against a side who let anybody shoot. So we've got a chance of getting some tasty odds here when they appear on the sports book. The game isn't fully priced up yet, but looking around, doing a bit of research, we might get about 3-1 for them to both attempt three shots in the game to hit those averages that they're sort of getting. And then if you're looking at shots on target, if you can double them up on the bet builder, you're looking at 10-1-ish potentially for two or more shots on target each, and 75-1 for three or more shots on target each, which is what happened in the Wolves game. So that could be a nice runner.
Well, you've heard of normal men, you've heard of innocent men, and now you've heard of shot happy men. Injury time goals could be a pain in the pocket if they ruin your bet. Now you've got 90-minute payouts to rescue you. If the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands, your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's in the description, 18+, begambleaware.org. If you don't know what I'm referring to, by the way, with that normal men, innocent men thing, go and treat yourself. It's very, very funny. Let's move on to West London, shall we? Lewis, Fulham against Liverpool. We don't know whether Liverpool have pulled off one of their great European comebacks in Italy against Atalanta or not, but either way, is it all catching up a little bit with Liverpool in the sense that we know how good they are going forward, but that's been misfiring a bit recently? But they always, always, always give the opposition a chance, don't they? And when that goes against them, like it did against Palace, then it becomes tricky, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's it. And I think, yeah, the obvious issue is, and the one that's been spoken about most, has been the issue in attack for Liverpool over the past few games, missing all those big chances, really racking up now, aren't they? That's been spoken about a lot. But yeah, I'm not, as you just referenced there, I'm not convinced their defensive process is as good as what maybe people think, and isn't really nowhere near a Premier League title winning level anyway.
It's nowhere near Arsenal's or Manchester City's. Exactly. They're the real outlier, right? They're like ahead on XG and all of that. They're great going forward, we know that. But defensively, they can be all over the place.
Well, that's it. And I dug into their expected numbers in defence, actually. And they've only conceded 16 goals on the road, which is actually, so this is away from home, the second best defensive record in the Premier League. But the underlying metrics point to a bit of an overachievement on that front. So according to the chances they shipped recorded by expected goals against, they should have conceded 22.47. So that's an overperformance of six goals. So that's a per 90 average of 1.49 expected goals against. And that's only the fourth best in the Premier League, and sort of makes Arsenal's per 90 expected goals tally of 0.72 look even more impressive. And normally it is, I know we talk about excitement normally and how we want to see goals and how the Premier League is the best league in the world, but it normally is the best defensive record that goes on to win the league. And Man City and Arsenal just have that edge over Liverpool and what we've seen so far. And they've only had one clean sheet in their, obviously speaking before the Atlanta game, so I'm not included that game in this, but they've only had one clean sheet in their last 11 matches. And in the last two games, it just feels like something's been malfunctioning again between the balance between the midfield and defence. It reminded me a lot of the Liverpool of last season. I can't explain it really, because Endo, McAllister and Szoboszlai have been excellent in the previous game. So I'm not sure what's gone on there. Maybe they're lacking a little bit of legs in there.
I think it's the press. I think Klopp alluded to it after the Palace game. If you only press at 80% and if you're not moving as a unit, all of the chain just breaks down, all of the links just dissolve, and then you're suddenly in big trouble.
And that's exactly what happened last season, and why Liverpool tailed off. So if they can't fix that and they can't get some fresh legs into that midfield and get that press right, then it could be actually a really sort of depressing end to Klopp's tenure. I really wouldn't want that to happen for for Liverpool fans, and I also love watching Jurgen Klopp in the Premier League. So it would be a bit of a sad end to what's been an amazing sort of fairy tale for Liverpool. But again, these expected goals against figures are sort of becoming quite alarming. Actually, the last two games, they conceded a total of 5.2. So that was 1.98 against Palace at Anfield, and 3.22 in the home leg against Atlanta. So that massive numbers they're really conceding, and that's the second and fifth most expected goals against figures they've conceded in a single game this season. So it ranks second and fifth. So I absolutely think Fulham could be competitive in this game, without doubt. So since Muniz came into the team in the 0-0 draw with Everton in January, Fulham have actually become one of the most dangerous attacking forces in the Premier League. So his eight goals have certainly been the catalyst for that improved numbers. But as a team, I think just as a whole, the whole process is functioning much better at the moment. And really, it's as I said, it's one of the best in the leagues. Over the last 12 Premier League games, only Liverpool and Man City are averaging more shots per game, so 17, and only Liverpool, Man City and Arsenal average more shots from inside the box per game than Fulham, and that's 12.3. So they are creating a lot of chances, and what the process in midfield is working really well as well. Polina's dominating again, and you've got good trickery out wide with Iwobi and Willian. Pereira played well at West Ham, and they got the centre forward there to feed off as well. So it's just a really nice balance at the moment going forward. And Marco Silva's such an underrated manager, I think. When these big jobs come about at sort of top six clubs, I have no idea why he's not in the conversation for it. But that's probably another argument to make. I think he'd do a really good job given the tools at a big club. So, and in those 12 games where they've recorded all those really impressive attacking metrics, they've beaten Bournemouth, Man United, Brighton, Tottenham, and West Ham, and should have beaten Newcastle as well. They dominated them in the first half, and they went on to lose as Newcastle improved in sort of last 15 minutes, 1-0. So that's really impressive form to beat all those teams in the last sort of 12 Premier League games. So definitely want to invest in a pro Fulham angle here. But the prices are quite tight. I mean, both teams to score is only 1.5 on the exchange. Fulham to score in the game is just 4-11 on the sportsbook. So I'd have thought we'd have got bigger prices there considering Liverpool's actual record, but perhaps the expected goals angle has been factored into those prices for Fulham in terms of Liverpool's defending. So I wouldn't put people off adding those to sort of a potential bet builder, but I wouldn't be interested in those in a single. So I'm just going to go chase a bit of a price and head to the anytime goal scorer markets here, where Willian stood out to me at 4-1 anytime. And surprisingly, he hasn't actually scored since netting in the Carabao Cup semi-final at Anfield between the two teams earlier this season. But he definitely is... He's had a few injuries.
Not really lively,
niggles.
I think, in the last few games.
Absolutely. At West Ham, I watched him at West Ham. He looked sort of his sparky self and sort of belied the fact he's 35 years old. Same age as me. And he's still going strong playing at the Premier League level.
Wait,
so absolutely.
Nearly 10 years older than that, then it'll hit you.
No, he'll still be playing, I think. He'll be playing probably maybe in the League Two, maybe, William.
Do you know how depressing it is as a commentator when you're talking about people like Thiago Silva being 39 and then you realise, oh, Christ, he's 5 years younger than me. That's when it really hits you.
So yeah, I've started to hit that phase in my life now where sort of these players, I'm older than a lot of these than some of these players. It is actually crazy.
You've got the looks, Kev. You can't have it all. You've got to remember that.
Well, that's it. Exactly. That's it. That's exactly it. You know, I am blessed. So what can you do?
And I suppose like Willian and like Kev, really, I mean, Willian's still got an edge to his game, hasn't he? So yeah. Importantly for this bet, I think he's also the likely Fulham penalty taker as well, which I don't think has been factored into the price, which is always a bonus to have on your side when you're sort of looking for trying to hunt some anytime goal scorer value. So, yeah, Willian, judged on his performance at West Ham, where he was, he was the sort of the focal point down the left. He started a lot of their attacks, loves to cut inside, loves to get shots away. And I think the Liverpool defence will give him a lot of space to do that. So the 4-1 anytime is the way I'll be looking to play this game on, when is it? Sunday, isn't it? Yes. So big game for Liverpool. But yeah, Willian to score anytime.
Boise, what's the next one you've got for us in your box of tricks?
In the archives. We're going to Everton against Nottingham Forest.
Yes.
A massive game at the bottom of the Premier League table, you know, the battle of the FFP offenders.
Yes, the PSR bandits.
PSR, yes, that's it. Yes, the PSR bandits.
How about El Deducto? Can we classify it as
yes,
El Deducto?
There we go, El Deducto. El Subtracto. Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, it's, I mean, this is a huge, huge game for both teams. And I'm actually really excited to watch this one. It's before the cup final, so we should be able to sneak that in. This is actually a similar angle for me as my Brentford v Luton take on Saturday's podcast, which I'm sure if you're listening to this, you've already listened to the Saturday one, because no sane human being would see a Sunday pod title and not listen to the Saturday version. And sort of anyone who may do that, well, I imagine they also put milk in before the water when making a cup of Yorkshire tea. So some serious questions need to be asked there. Serious questions.
Can't have that.
And actually, you're going to have to go back and listen to it, because I'm not going to go as deep on the sort of set-piece teams versus the rubbish set-piece teams as I am here, because we have another clash in this game at Everton and Forest. So we've got Everton leading the way when it comes to the highest XG generated from set-pieces this season. And Forest have conceded the most goals in the Premier League. 21 they've conceded from set-pieces. It's been a real issue for Forest since Nuno came in, and it's been a big part of why they've not been able to pull away, I think. And I just think, just like when Everton played Burnley at home the other week, that 1-0 win, this is going to be tight. I think the chances of a set-piece sort of deciding this one seems really, really high to me. Sean Dyche, he'll look to boil this game down to small margins. And I think even more so after that drubbing at Chelsea on Monday night. You know, it was the heaviest defeat of Sean Dyche's managerial career on Monday. And I just think that's even more of a reason for Dyche to say, do not lose, before thinking, right, now let's go on and win. And how are we going to do that? So with this being on Sky as well, we're going to get a fully priced up match from Betfair, including specials such as headed goals. And the reason I've gone straight there is because I wanted to put up James Tarkowski to score. The 17-2 price I thought was actually a little bit too short for a man who scored 3 goals in 80 Premier League games for Everton, or over 80 Premier League games. So I'm going to put him up to score first, as Lewis alluded to on the Saturday pod, 17-1. That you can have that one. That's out there. Just in case the sort of my thoughts play out on this tight game where just the single goal does decide it. But I'm going to look when they released at his shot lines as well, because I think we can get probably around 3-1 for a couple of shots, or 3-1 for one of them to hit the target, and I'll take that. I really, really will in this one. You know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is also brilliant in the air, obviously, and I think he will be back in the team after missing out for injury on Monday.
Yeah, I think they rested him, didn't they, because of the hamstring injury. They were thinking about this game instead of the Chelsea game.
And it's just too short to score any time. I think it's he'll probably go off around 5-4. It might be 13-8 at the minute. I just think it's too short for... I mean, again, it is a striker, but it's having such a poor season in front of goal. So don't be afraid to check out his headed goal prices if you want a little bit bigger price on him scoring. I think he's going to have plenty of headed shots in this one. The sort of special that I wanted to throw out there, and I'm genuinely really, really excited about this one, is Dwight McNeil to assist a goal scored by James Tarkowski. So McNeil has long been Dyche's go-to man for set pieces, you know, easily the most chances created for Everton this season. And his job on Sunday will be putting ball after ball into the box against this, you know, concerning, against Forest, who have got a really concerning record. They'll be playing for free kicks, corners, whatever they can do to get that ball high into the air for old Tarky. And his goal record, it's not great, as I mentioned, but even against Chelsea, there was a couple of, I think Everton had, did they hit double figures for corners? I'm sure they did. And he's a bit like the Maguire one for England, where the ball sort of gravitates toward him. So he just shows that he is a threat, despite always getting to the ball. Sorry, someone was distracting me in the window there. So here's hoping he manages
to
score this.
God damn it.
Well, do you know what it was? It was, you know, the man who must not be named on Saturday's pod who said Haaland was a fraud. He was giving me the finger in the window. He must have heard me, because he was giving me the finger in the window, and he knows I'm on the pod as well, so he'd be getting a slap on the wrist after this.
Disgraceful. Disgraceful behaviour.
These two have been playing together for years now, of course, at Burnley and Everton. And this is the most exciting part of this bet. His 2 goals this season, Kev, both assisted by Dwight McNeil. His one goal in an Everton shirt last season, assisted by Dwight McNeil. All 3 goals have been assisted for Everton by McNeil. And I just think this could be written in the stars on Sunday. And I think we might get 20, 25, 30-1 for that to come in.
Lovely stuff. You want to talk about this game as well, Lewis, don't you? Is it a similar angle, or have you found something else? Is it a Tarky party for you as well?
No, it wouldn't put anyone off the that sounds great from boys there. Tarkowski is always a threat, and very good example used with the Maguire there. He is the focal point. He's the first contact, really, of every set piece that goes into the box. And Boise mentioned there, he's excited to watch this game. I won't go that far, really, to be honest, from a purist point of view, but I'm excited about a bet that I'll definitely be back in. And that's Nottingham Forest and the draw, no bet, 6-4 here, which I think is just absolutely huge when you consider what Everton are going through at the moment. And I've realised something lately about Sean Dyche's teams. They're actually quite streaky, so a bit streaky, Sean. And once they get in a rut, it's hard to get out of it. But when they're confident, they can sort of rack up a lot of points in a short space of time. So there was a run mid-season where they won 10 of 14 games, which seems absolutely bizarre now that they could put 10 wins together in 14 games. Yeah. And it just shows you that momentum, when you play Dyche's football, is so key. And I do think that can be seen when they concede the first goal in a game as well, which has happened 16 times this season in the Premier League, and they failed to win any of them and gone on to lose that game 13 of those 16 times. So if once they fall behind, it's very difficult for them to get back in to a match.
I commentated on that Chelsea game on Monday, and I think one of the stats was they failed to win the last 32 Premier League games in which they've conceded first. I mean, that's amazing, really. Isn't it only 4 points from losing positions as well?
I think it might be 36 games that actually haven't turned that round. So yeah, it's a very, very worrying trend, but something that I think we can profit from as punters. Just their overall form as well is just simply horrendous. So they've now just won once in their last 15 Premier League games, and they've scored 10 goals in those 15 games, and they've scored more than twice in a game just once, and that was away in Tottenham in those 15 games. And obviously, you just mentioned it there, the 6-0 hammering at Chelsea on Monday, where everything just they crumbled, didn't they? Massively under pressure. Yeah. Didn't look like they were capable of dealing with this sort of the things you need to do in a relegation battle. And there were lots of fronting up, weren't there, afterwards by Dyche and Tarkowski saying sort of expect a reaction, blah, blah, blah. Lots of apologising. So Forest are going to be aware of the Everton tornado. Can't see it to me. I can't see it. I ran some numbers. So I usually like backing teams after they've suffered a bit of a hide-in, because I just think the reaction isn't factored into the price, because there's a bit of recency bias factored in there because of the hammering that's just happened. But on the last 16 occasions, a Sean Dyche team in the Premier League has conceded four or more goals to a side that wasn't Manchester City or Liverpool. They have won the next game only twice and have kept only two clean sheets in those 16 matches. So that sort of plays into my sort of streaky Sean theory again, that once they're in a rut and they're suffering defeats, it's really hard for Dyche to turn the tide. And I've been really positive about Everton this season because of the sort of the underlying metrics that have been propping up their bad results. But especially in defence, where I think they were ranked sort of the third or fourth best defence at one point. But I'm absolutely starting to turn now on this Everton team, and the expected goals against figure is really worrying for them. In the last seven games, they're averaging 1.9 per 90, and that's the fifth worst in the Premier League over that time. And they haven't played anyone higher than sixth in that period. So it's not like they've had to face Man City, Liverpool, Arsenal. They've been playing teams in mid-table and down at the bottom. And that sort of strong defence that was once propping up their season, I think, is just absolutely creaking now. It's really, I had to have a look at the Everton to be relegated price as well, considering that their defence is now borderline a relegation level metric along with their attacking numbers. So it's 100-30 with Betfair for them to get relegated, which is actually the shortest price out there in the industry. So I think the traders are obviously thinking Everton are maybe in a bit more trouble than what people perceive as well. And they're only 2 points clear of Luton with a prospect. And there is the prospect of them getting 2 points back after their latest appeal. But that still might not be enough when I'm looking at their running. So after this one, which I think they'll lose, they've got Liverpool at home in midweek. They'll lose that. Then they'll play Brentford at home, which is a big, big game. But again, the pressure will be on there. Brentford, a very hard team to beat. And then it's Luton away on a Friday night at Kenilworth Road, which is just the worst time you could go to that ground on a Friday night, I think. They'll struggle there, I think. And then this might be their saving grace for the season. They got Sheffield United at home in their penultimate game, because on the last day of the season, they go to Arsenal away. So to coin just a Paul Merson phrase, I think they're banging trouble, Jeff. So, yeah, banging trouble Everton here. And the fact that Branthwaite limped off as well in that the Chelsea game.
Yeah.
He's been a revelation back there for Everton this term. And he could be a huge miss if they can't get him fit for this game. Nathan Patterson limped off as well. I think Seamus Coleman got taken off at half-time as well. They're both doubts. And just to mention Tarkowski there, I think he's been really poor the last six games. And I think he's feeling the effects of starting the last 70 Premier League games for Everton in a row. I think he's been really shoddy and reckless with his defending. He's made 12 fouls in five games and has been yellow carded in his last four games straight. So I think he's a runner to be carded, absolutely, if you're playing the Bet Builders. The card prices aren't available on Betfair at the moment, but there is 7-2 out there for him to get carded again this weekend, which I thought was very, very interesting. But yeah, it's that draw no bet price for Forest at 6-4 based on the way Everton are regressing. I think it's quite a monstrous price and might be one of the best prices I've seen around this season, actually. I'm that strong on it. So I've got much more faith in Forest's forward line than I have Everton's as well. I mean, they've scored in the last five games and their underlying numbers are becoming quite consistent now. They've won four of the last five XG battles to an aggregate score of 7.9 to 5.9. And they've also got Morgan Gibbs-White, who without doubt will be the best player on that pitch in attacking sense on Sunday. So,
yeah.
And he's starting now to just grab some goal involvements to back up his sort of dazzling individual performances. So he's got five goal involvements. That's a goal or assist in his last five games. So I think he is going to be key to this match. I think he's got so much quality, and that Everton attacking play at Chelsea just looked drained of confidence. I mean, you're playing Ashley Young as a right winger in the Premier League against some of the best teams in the world. I mean,
utterly ridiculous.
Has he got something on Dyche? Maybe, I'm not sure, but comparing his attacking output to Morgan Gibbs-White, it's just chalk and cheese, really. So I'm really excited about this Forest bet, and I think they'll score in the game. And if they score, I think that'd be enough for them not to lose the game, because Everton are incapable of scoring more than one Premier League goal in a game at the moment. So, yeah, I'm going to be back in that draw, no bet. I'm heavily over the next sort of 24 hours or so. And definitely prices like Forest to win to nil at 11-2 are also got to be on people's radar, I think. Because if Forest are going to win, I can see a 1-0, 2-0 scoreline. So, yeah, I'm taking quite a strong view on Everton this week. And I think their season's going to take a turn for the worst.
Well, one team that season has been taking a turn for the worse quite consistently recently is West Ham. We don't know how they've got on against Bayer Leverkusen. I don't think they turned it round, but maybe they did. Who knows? That's the beauty of recording on a Thursday morning. Maybe there was Mikel Antonio hat-trick and they went through 3-2 on aggregate. I don't think they did. They're away at Palace, Lewis, and I'm a big fan of Oliver Glasner. I have been for a long time. And I think Palace do, you know, with Elise and Eze back in the team, do look a lot better. But I feel like the structure's better as well.
Yeah, I think that's what he's been working on in the first few games, wasn't he? He was just trying to get them a bit more cohesive as a unit, maybe a bit more solid in key areas of the pitch. And then to add just the sort of the cherry on top and the sparkle through Eze and Elise. And that came to the fore, didn't it, at Anfield? I thought they were very good, actually. Maybe we shouldn't have been too surprised that Palace won at Liverpool, considering it was the first time that Eze and Elise had both started. They say the duo started at Anfield for the first time since Palace's 3-2 win over Sheffield United in January. And I thought, yeah, Palace looked like a completely different beast in just with how they structured their attacks to pop the ball around really nicely, which takes a lot of pressure off their defence, which can be overworked sometimes. So do like it when these two are in the same team and keep the ball so nicely, cause so many problems. And I do think when they're on song, I think they're Champions League level players, to be honest, Elise especially. If he can stay fit, he is an outstanding talent. And I do think the numbers actually back up the sort of the argument that Elise and Eze are massive for this Palace team. So I've written about this in my notebook column for Betfair this week. So since the start of last season, in the 28 Premier League games where Eze and Elise have both started, Palace have a win percentage of 46% and average 1.4 goals per 90 minutes. And then if you take them out of the equation, in the 42 games without at least one of them starting, those numbers drop dramatically to a win percentage of 14% and 0.9 goals scored per 90 minutes. So huge difference when they play. The visuals back that up, the numbers back that up. And it's been a shame that Elise's only played 831 minutes this season in the Premier League due to those hamstring injuries, because I love watching him play. I think he's a bit of a genius. I think he's a bit of a genius, very intelligent, really good. I really like players that have got a killer final ball. It's very hard to find in a footballer that people have got a really intelligent final ball. They make the right decisions when under pressure, and he is definitely one of these players. And he's managed 6 goals and 3 assists this season in those 831 minutes. So it's a very healthy goal involvement. And he was very heavily involved in the Eze's. It's a wonderful goal at Anfield, actually. They built it brilliantly through midfield. And it wasn't a smash and grab either. I didn't think... I know people talked about... I mean, Jurgen Klopp referenced that. I saw an interview the other day. He said Liverpool should have scored 4, but they could have scored 9. Not having that at all. I think they probably could have scored a couple of goals, but I'm not sure it would have been a walloping on Palace.
Mateta had that shot saved, didn't he? Mateta had brought that amazing save out of Alisson.
Yeah, they've just got the numbers here. They created to say a whopping 1.98 worth of non-penalty worth of expected goals, and that's the highest expected goals against figure Liverpool have conceded at home this season in the Premier League. So that's a huge, huge sort of indicator of how much Eze and Elise are having effects on this Palace attack. And I do think with the shrewd addition of the quite exciting, isn't he? This is Adam Wharton in midfield they got from Blackburn.
Yeah,
he's a very clever footballer as well, and plays the game in the right way, gets the ball down, tries to move forward with his passing. I do think Palace are capable of posting some quite impressive attacking returns under Glasner between now and the end of the season, if Elise and Eze can stay fit. And I'll definitely be backing them when the prices are right, which they are here, definitely. So as you mentioned, we're recording this before West Ham's clash with Leverkusen. But as you mentioned, I'll be stunned if they are still in the competition after that. And I just think there's so much uncertainty around David Moyes at the moment. Is he signing that 2-year deal that apparently is on the table? Is he not? Who knows? I mean, it's a bit of a mess, I think, behind the scenes there. And it actually wouldn't surprise me if they both parted ways in the summer. So I do think there's a huge chance that the players just might struggle to remain motivated despite sort of their best intentions as professional footballers. And I just think performance levels can subconsciously sort of drop, and especially away from home where there's sort of no home fans screaming at them to pull their finger out, maybe. I just think they might be able to just drop. They just might drop their percentage levels, just maybe 4 or 5%. And at this level, I just think that could be huge when you're playing in the Premier League. So, yeah, no. And it's just the West Ham's defensive record as well. Absolutely horrendous recently. So they're 14 games now without a clean sheet in the Premier League. And their overall defensive metrics since the turn of the year are just, awful. Conceded the third most goals of any team in those games, so 28 in 14 games, and their expected goals against per 90 is 2.14, which is the second worst of any team in that period, behind only Luton. So yet again, the metrics are showing just how much of a false position they're in, really, West Ham. They're so lucky to be seventh, and I do think there is a chance that they might drop like a stone, actually, over the last sort of 6 games or so. So finally get to the bet, which I think is a cracker. It's Palace scoring over 1.5 goals in the game. At even money with the sports book. It was bigger this week. It was 11 to 10 earlier this week. So there has been money for it, which I think is a good sign. I just think with Eze and Elise and the way that Palace are constructing their attacks and West Ham's defensive vulnerability, Palace to score 2 or more goals in the game, getting even money. That's lovely job, that one. I'll have a bit of that.
Sounds good to me. That's all we have time for. Oh, boys!
Sorry, I've just got.
Come on, then.
Here comes the Radaby shout.
Lucas. It was actually just a question for you on Glasner, actually. Just if you could quickly sum up for me what sort of manager he is, because it's been like a tricky start from at Palace before they got that win at Anfield. I think it was 1-4 or 5. And obviously, every manager would love a couple of flair players like Eze and Elise. So,
yeah.
Does he rely on them, or what? How does he build his teams?
No, I think he wants structure. He wants them to press. The pressing, I always think, is very, very interesting with his teams. If you look at his Wolfsburg team, they were very, very well organised. It was very much a collective effort defensively. And he managed to get that team into the Champions League, which was a real surprise. And after he left, they nearly got relegated the following season. So it shows you the impact that he can have there. With Frankfurt, he took the handbrake off a little bit and they played some really nice attacking football and obviously managed to win the Europa League. So that was impressive. There's pace about what they do. So yeah, I think Lewis is right. I think what he's done with Palace is get the structure right. I think what you see with Mateta as well, you'll get the best out of Mateta if you let him run onto the ball. So if you try and play him in behind and let him run onto the ball, he can do damage. And he did that against City in the last home game. He did that against Liverpool nearly. Robertson obviously cleared off the line. But I think when he can run onto the ball, that's where he's dangerous with his back to goal. But, you know, he can have a touch like a trampoline at times. But I think when he can run in behind, that's when he doesn't have to think about it and he's dangerous. So, yeah, I think Palace are fine. I think it's a really good appointment. I think they're going to be absolutely fine in the fullness of time. I think that's all we have time for.
Yeah, you can wrap us up now. Yeah,
On this edition of Football Only Better, please do remember to gamble responsibly. Lots of Premier League games in midweek, so we'll have a show ahead of those. So make sure you keep an eye out for that. Remember, all of our shows on YouTube, on Betfair's new channel for non-racing content. So make sure you like and subscribe. From Lewis, from Big Bad Boise, and from me, it's goodbye for now.